Hi, everyone, and welcome into another Sad Panda edition of Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on Crack Sidewalks. Joe McCann and Phil Bush here with you today. And Phil, we went into the weekend a week ago. We said we're going to expect two losses, but hope for the best. And, well, we got the
Yeah, we're going to go ahead and call this the Eeyore episode because nothing turned out well.
Nothing at all. We're going to look at what went maybe right and mostly wrong for Marquette over the past week, but we're not going to hopefully not dwell on it too much. But what does Marquette have to do to right the ship? Because they do have some opportunities to do so over the next 2 weeks, and we'll talk about that later in the show as well. But Phil, basically, you know, you and I were talking in our pre-podcast chat that the two games almost seemed opposite of each other in that it felt like we were close to Villanova but got blown out. And it felt like we were it felt like we got blown out by Xavier, even though the final score was
The game's just, you know, I wonder if this podcast feels a little bit different if the Nova and Xavier games are flipped, because, you know, if you look at the Nova game, the result turned out bad, but there were things to really take away as positive. You know, they got down big early, came charging back, and took a lead into halftime that just was totally unexpected to have that lead against what Ken Pom is rating the number one team in the country on their home floor. Mm-hmm. You know, they really competed till foul trouble and some shots just not falling for them kind of took the air out of the balloon and Nova won. Whereas the Xavier game, it just felt like, with the exception of the first couple of minutes when they barnstormed out to take the lead against Xavier, it felt like Marquette was running uphill with weights on its ankles the whole game.
Yeah, it's just, I guess the thing I'll take away most from, I guess, the Nova game is, like, the way they rallied was impressive, and it got me, like, cautiously optimistic for the Xavier game if they could put together a full game like that. But again, Nova pulled away. They were the far superior team that day. You know, they just made so more, like, just Nova came out just guns ablaze and shot well above their average from three, and kind of continued that. They slowed down in the middle of the game but were able to pull away because of that later in the game. And then the Xavier game, for me, gosh, it was just maddening watching Marquette trying to figure out that 1-3-1 zone. Marquette goes in or endures a 21-0 run from Xavier, and then the lead has just disappeared, and is all of a sudden they're down 10 at the half. And if they, I mean, they hung with them, I guess, a little bit in the second half if you look at the box score, but it sure didn't feel that way. It just felt like Marquette never got anything going. And, you know, I hate to bring this up again, but it seems like they sure fell in love with their 3-point shooting against Xavier, trying to rally in that game. And gosh, 4 of 25 as a team, and gosh, just a brutal 1 of 10 for Dwayne Wilson. Just the shooting was maddening. I guess they resorted to, well, we're going to shoot over this 1-3-1, and boy, it just didn't work.
Yeah,
out
it was. It was a game. It felt like a game. The Xavier game felt like it was a game of waiting 5-6 minutes too long to make adjustments the entire game. You know, when Xavier went to the 1-3-1, basically Tracy Carter had it on the right side of the lane and would dribble around, pick up his dribble, look for a pass. Dwayne Wilson would stay about 2 feet off the 3-point arc, and everyone kind of run around with, like, chickens with their heads cut off around the baseline. There just didn't seem to be any consistency or understanding, even when Xavier was giving, you know, if Dwayne had gone to the elbow, there was space there for him to operate. And he did later in the game, but, you know, it felt like there weren't a lot of adjustments. And one of the things, and I guess I'll ask you this, because I kind of posited on Twitter, is, you know, for that Xavier game, what caused the difference? Was it coaching? Was it player execution, just poor execution, or was it a talent disparity? What kind of percentage of those three things made up the result that was that Xavier game?
Yeah, you said percentage of all three things, because it certainly is, yes, all three of those. But you know, I would say, I would say probably 40% of it is Xavier's just as better. You know, Maybe even closer to 50, because I think they play that game 10 times. Xavier probably wins 9, to be honest, because I just think they're better and more experienced at every position. They have really tough guys coming off the bench that are just tough to match up with, or for Marquette anyway. I mean, gosh, look at Farr's numbers on the glass and how bad he dominated. 19 rebounds for James Farr. 14 defensively, and he had 5 offensively, and he had 16 points, 16-9 for him. And of course, the old coach team with a lot of length, and just they kind of bullied Marquette a little bit down low. They haven't been out rebounded in a game this year. They threw that stat out there, and it was true again on Saturday where they out rebounded Marquette by 11. Now, as far, and then I would say the rest of it, if I'm going to say 40% is Xavier's talent disparity, then I'll say, you know, the other 60%, I'll split it up 30 and 30 as far as coaching and player execution. You would have thought they would have had maybe a better plan of attack for a 1-3-1, because it's not like it's the first time Xavier's been in a 1-3-1. That's kind of one of their signatures, actually. They've played that a lot. And the thing is that Fisher got some early buckets. Maybe they were playing man at the time, but I mean,
yeah, they it seemed like they played man when Farr wasn't in the game. They seemed to go 1-3-1 when Farr was in the game. See, I take a little bit different look at it, because while there is no doubting that Xavier has a lot of talent and a lot of experience, I think we had the talent to compete in that game. I mean, we only lost by 8. If you look at it by a quote-unquote quarter-by-quarter, you know, first 10, second 10, third 10, fourth 10, we won 2 out of the 4 and lost by 2 points. You know, so in the first quarter, third quarter, and fourth quarter, in aggregate, we beat Xavier. It was that 21-0 run in that second quarter, that last 10 minutes of the first half, where they went up 25-10. Against Marquette. So I think the talent was there. I think the execution, especially when they started settling for jumpers that Xavier was more than happy to give them, was a problem. And I would also make the argument, originally I was going to say it was something like, you know, 50% execution, 30% coaching, 20% disparity in talent. But given how effective the 2-3 zone was late in the game, I really question why that didn't happen sooner.
Wojo really, really wants to be a man-to-man team, doesn't he? Like, he really, really does. And he keeps throwing it out there, and Marquette keeps getting beat in it, and he ends up going to the zone. And more often than not, the zone does help Marquette. And I think there are several reasons he should probably consider that zone more often. One is foul trouble, because when Luke Fisher's in foul trouble, I mean, Marquette's going to struggle, because Henry Ellenson is just not a great center. And I would also add, Henry Ellenson, I don't think, is very good defensively in the post. He's been getting abused by guys like Farr and Chris Jenkins and Marcus Derrickson. And these are guys who, you know, are certainly not as highly regarded in this upcoming draft as he is. And boy, they are bullying him down there. And I think he would maybe hopefully protect Marquette against paint touches. Pointed out that Marquette opponents are shooting 7% higher from 3 against Marquette than on their season average. So maybe if they can defend the 3 a little better out of the zone. I know 3-pointing is a way to beat a zone sometimes, but you got to figure something out, because they're just leaving guys open when they play this.
Well, I think one thing to note, I'm glad you brought up the Henry defense, because we talked the last podcast about, you know, whether defending Henry or whether Henry needs defending or whatever from how he's doing versus expectations. Mm-hmm. I think the one thing that really is killing him and prevents people from seeing his true value is his defense is terrible. He is probably of the players that get you know, significant minutes. I would say he is the worst defender of
for
that
his
group.
Position. Yeah, I would have to say he is, just because, I mean, if the other team has a big guy, and not necessarily a huge guy, just a guy with a little bit of girth, like, you know, 6'6" with some muscle, you know, guys like that can back him down. And gosh, when Henry gets the ball, even on offense, if Henry gets the ball 15, 10 feet away from the basket with his back to the basket, he's not going anywhere. Like, and I saw him trying to back up to Ochefu. I'm like, he couldn't move him with a bulldozer. I mean, he wasn't going anywhere. But yeah, I did kind of want to readdress the Henry thing again this week, because a lot of people, I did not say a lot, but a few. I say a lot, I mean like two. But, you know.
Well, that means something, right?
It's like the old, you know, when you get a hateful email in the television world, that means a billion people were offended. But but I did see a few people on Twitter saying, I can't believe Henry's a draft pick. He, you know, I can't believe this guy's going to get drafted. Number one, don't forget you're talking about potential. Don't confuse potential and production when you're talking about the NBA. And but while I certainly maintain my position that Henry would be a lottery pick this year based on potential, one thing I thought about over the last week watching him play is my concern of him with him in at the next level. If he were to go pro this year, how well would he do in his first 3 years in the league? And would he do well enough to get a nice second contract? Like, I would have a concern with that. He would get really buried and maybe even spend some time in the D League in his first couple of years. Not that that's an awful thing. I mean, Marcus Smart spent a lot of time in the D League in his rookie year, and he's doing better now playing for the Celtics. But yeah, I am definitely concerned about him at matching up at the next level, because he has enough trouble at the college level, as you said, defending, and certainly he's not that great in the post yet as far as offensively either. I mean, he's much better when he's moving.
I agree wholeheartedly with the potential statement. The other part is if anybody's watched the NBA, it's not like defense is a major priority. You know, there's pockets here and there. So, you know, I think they will absolutely overlook his defense in terms of draft potential. But I think you're right in terms of minutes and how he's going to do in the NBA in his early career. That's going to be a major point. I mean, look at how Jay Crowder has earned his minutes with the Celtics and with the Mavericks before that, because he played hard-nosed defense, he can guard three positions, and he could shoot the three. You know, and it's basically Henry is the exact opposite of that.
Right, yeah, I would be concerned about him, especially if he were to go to a team that already has some depth at the four position, where it would be tough for him to see the floor. And so I think the team would say, look, I mean, you could, you know, be on the bench here and play 5 minutes a game, or we could send you to the D League where you can get some experience. And, you know, again, maybe that's not a terrible thing, and maybe that's something you'd be open to. But I do, while I think he would be drafted high as far as potential, I do have a lot of concerns about him as a rookie in the NBA at 19 if he were to go that route. But as it relates to Marquette, there was a great article actually about Henry's draft stock that was published earlier in the week. It really summed up well about how I kind of feel about Henry, is that he is super talented and he gives you a lot. He is an excellent rebounder, and you know, the athleticism, you see it, but you still want more, because you can see he could give you a lot more because of the athleticism, but because he does get beat up defensively a little bit, and he does turn the ball over, especially when he gets double teamed. And while I think statistically he had actually a pretty good game against Xavier, I mean, I really don't have, I mean, offensively I don't have any complaints against Xavier. Defensively, yeah, he got beat up again. You know, Farr was really tough for him.
Yeah.
But
well, I will say that kind of the one thing that needs to be kept in mind, especially in conjunction with the discussion of man versus 2-3 zone, if you look where a lot of the issues on man comes from, and where we have issues, you know, like Paint Touches said, where we're giving up a higher percentage of threes than a team is typically making on the season, it's because of the rotations as a result of Henry's either slow to rotate or you know, kind of gets beat one on one on defense, which forces the rest of the defense to adjust. With the 2-3, you can hide his defense, and his length becomes an asset there. Right, he's playing the wing, he's got energy, you know, and his rebounding is still relatively effective. So that's why I really think they should be doing at least 50% 2-3 zone in a game. You know, go 2-3 on maids and man to man on misses or something. You know, when they make on the offensive end, come back and do a 2-3 zone. When they miss on the offensive end, come back man to man or something like that. They need to do something a little
bit
different.
I think like last year was a little bit of a different situation because Marquette was so thin. They didn't have enough bodies, and so they went to a zone. Just because Luke Fisher was their only big. He was their only big at all, and they had to protect him. And they were just so thin. I mean, Wojo was like, man, look, we just can't do man to man at all. We just don't have enough guys. And he finally got enough guys on his roster this year, probably thinking, all right, now we can be a man to man team. And I think now he's for different reasons. He's probably concedes the ideas like, man, we just can't play man. Like, we are just not a man-to-man team. And so hopefully over the next couple games, we see a little bit more of that 2-3 zone against DePaul and St. John's. We'll talk about those games coming up in a little bit. But I did want to touch on a couple other things, positively and negatively. Let's stick with negative since we're on a roll with hateful stuff right now.
I can feel the hate flowing through me.
Obviously, we can't not talk about how Dwayne played. Is it fair to go ahead and slap the sophomore slump label on Dwayne? Because maybe I'm overreacting to one game here, but you tell me if I am. But boy, Dwayne was rough against Xavier.
Yeah, you know what? It was absolutely brutal. Because one of the things he went, as you mentioned, 1-for-10 from 3-point range. It wasn't. I mean, shot selection has always been a struggle in my mind for him. But he had open looks, and he just didn't. It was just not a good game for him. And you wonder if, you know, is that a mentally challenging game that, you know, that does he come back from that and is he better? It just seems like all season he's really struggled with his game. Statistically, in some key areas, he's shooting on the season. I was shocked by this on the season, at least within. Oh no, I take that back. So on last year he was shooting 36% from behind the arc. This year, I don't know how, but he's shooting 32% from behind the arc, but 28% in conference. So that maybe makes sense. But you want last year's Dwayne back as opposed to this year's. Like I don't know what's going on.
How do his shooting like percentages stack up as far as number of shots? Is he taking more threes this year? Percentage wise,
by far.
It seems like he's settling more this year. Like he just wants to be a 3-point shooter a little more than he probably should. Maybe it's because he's got those two big guys in there and just doesn't think he needs to go in there. And I would encourage him to attack the basket when he can. And you know, once he gets there, he can decide if he wants to go up with it or dump it off to Luke or Henry. But it just seems to me like he is settling for a lot of jumpers, especially long 3-point jumpers. I will add, though, that the funniest one, though, was the last one when Xavier had that meaningless turnover in the final seconds and the spread was 8. So if Dwayne if he would have made that last one, he would have been 2-for-10 on the day, which is still bad, but he would have covered. But I thought it would have been hilarious if that fell. But it didn't. But I digress. Rough day for Dwayne. I'm a little concerned that he's just. Hopefully that's a one-game thing. We're just overreacting maybe to one really bad game from Dwayne. But, boy, it seems like he's settling for a lot of threes.
Yeah, well, and I wonder how much of it is coaching and how much of it is just what he's deciding. I did notice, and maybe I'm ascribing motives that aren't there, but he took an especially egregious 3-point shot midway through the second half, and I noticed he got some bench time next to Travis Diener for a little bit there. So you know, I think there's some coaching going on there, but I do wonder if Wojo is saying, hey guys, we need to space the floor, so we do need 3-point shooters. Dwayne, you're going to be more of our 3-point shooter spacer. So he's got a coaching green light that maybe statistically doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah, I guess so. If you need spacing and you need threes, I mean, there just aren't that many guys to do it. Because, I mean, while Cheatham shoots for a high percentage, he still doesn't seem like he's comfortable shooting a lot of threes yet. And I guess statistically, Cohen is still your best guy, right, shooting threes. He's kind of been quiet lately, I guess. But
he's had some. There was it Villanova or was it the Xavier game where he had a wide open look from the corner and quadruple clutched it and then airballed the shot?
I don't remember which game, but it just seems like he didn't do much in the Xavier game. He only had 3 points against Xavier. Yeah.
He only had three, and Sandy's kind of quiet. He's shooting almost 38% on the season in total, but he's shooting 17% from three in conference play.
Yeah, I guess maybe
that's bad.
I guess that's probably where the quiet comes from. Is boy, the threes have stopped falling because he was shooting it well in non-conference play. Now maybe he got a lot of wide open looks against those 300 plus RPI teams that Marquette was playing.
anyone can shoot well against that.
When you're that wide open, maybe that helps. But I'm going to switch to one positive note that we take out of the Xavier game. And who here is for more playing time for Wally Ellingson?
Me. Both hands are up. You can't see, but both hands are up.
I mean, he almost had a double-double in the game. He had 9 points and 8 boards. And as I was watching him play, I was wondering, what is it about Wally that would make you say, we got to get him out of there? We just can't have Wally out there right now. Because I'm not saying that he's an amazing all-around player, but he hustles, he rebounds, he shoots it okay. His numbers, I've heard people say he's one of the best shooters on the team. He hasn't shown it necessarily. He hasn't taken a lot of three-pointers.
But saying you're the best shooter on this team is nothing.
But I can't remember a time, granted he hasn't played much, but I just can't remember a time where I've said, we got to get Wally out of there. Get Wally out of there. We can't have him out there. Because when he's on the floor, mostly positive things happen.
Well, and I will say this, and I've been talking about it since at least the Seton Hall game. It seems, for whatever reason, and this is anecdotal, I don't have any evidence to prove this, but it seems every time Marquette goes on a run of some consequence in the first half of games, because for whatever reason it seemed Wally was only getting minutes in first halves of games, it coincided when he was on the floor. He's an energy guy, right? He'll get you rebounds. He's going to play defense. He's got some ability to play offense if there's, he's not, I think he's more of a defensive rebounder type specialist than he is an offensive player, but he's got the ability should it be necessary and the opportunities are there. And he's just an energy guy. That's probably one of the more baffling coaching decisions for me why Wally's not getting more minutes.
I think the label as an energy guy hurts him because the connotation with energy guy is it's all effort and not talent.
Right.
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 But I think he has more talent than he is given credit for. Like I think when he's in there, he actually rebounds at a pretty decent level. And that probably comes from pickup games when his brothers, where at least probably recently, he's probably been the shortest guy out there, trying to rebound against his brothers. And so and of course we all know how well he can jump. And so I would be in favor of more minutes for Wally Ellingson in the rotation, especially over these next three games when Marquette, I don't think they're going to blow out DePaul and St. John's. They should win those games, and I think it would be an opportunity to see how well he does, and if it's more than just energy he brings, if it's production. Like I said, almost a double-double against a top 10 team. I mean, I think that's significant in 20 minutes.
Right, and had more rebounds than his brother had, which is saying something because Henry has been the leading rebounder all season. So Henry had 37 minutes, Wally had 20 minutes, and Wally had one more rebound, including one more offensive rebound, which is kind of where Marquette has struggled on the boards, is in the offensive rebound.
Yeah, I think that's when you look at KenPom and their stats for efficiency. You know, they call them the four factors, and Marquette is average to better in most of them, but where they are below average is offensive rebounding. Now their worst statistic is turnover percentage offensively. That's easy. I mean, you probably need to go to KenPom to look at that. But where they're hanging right around 200 in the nation, which would be obviously in the lower half of the 350 teams in the nation. I mean, they are 200, as we're recording this on Sunday night, they are 202nd in offensive rebounding, and opponents are getting 30%, almost 31% of their offensive rebounds. So you would think that Marquette would be able to rebound a little bit better than they've shown with Fisher and Ellingson in there, especially since for all the, times people gripe about Henry, one area where he is unquestionably very good is his rebounding. I mean, he rebounds at a high level, and that's what that scouting report I talked about earlier. That's one thing they said he probably does at close to an NBA level right now is anticipate rebounds and see where the ball's going to bounce and to be there and to get those rebounds. So the rebounding absolutely has to get better, and I think maybe if you have – maybe if you go with a little bit bigger lineup and if you're playing both Ellensons with Fisher, maybe you would see the rebounding numbers be a little bit better.
Yeah. Well, you know, what's interesting is, you know, talking about positives and the turnover rate. So we talked about how it felt like it was a blowout, but they were actually closer. Marquette, for the first time in as long as I can remember, actually won the turnover battle. They only turned the ball over 10 times to 15 for Xavier, which you can probably point out and say why Marquette, as one of the main reasons that Marquette was in that in spite of everything else. So is that a sign that maybe the team's figuring it out? Not sure. You know, and I'm not sure what's responsible for that because Carter was in foul trouble a fair amount of the time, so he wasn't really in there. Was he, you know, less turnover – him not being in there make the team less turnover prone? Not sure.
Yeah, but that is a good point. That was like one – and again, I think that's probably a reason why Marquette was able to hang around as long as they did. Was that they protected the ball pretty well in that game. I think that's probably pretty helpful. But the big thing was they just got killed on the boards. And that, when you go 7 minutes without scoring a bucket, I mean, it's hard to recover from that.
That was one of the most brutal offensive stretches I can remember in the last multiple years. Mm-hmm. It just was, especially given how, you know, that they were you know, in theory, in competition with this game the whole way, with the exception of that period. Like, it's just inexplicable that they can't score a basket or get to the free throw line in 7 minutes.
Yeah, and to me, this is another thing I don't have any statistics for, but to me, it seems like Marquette's best possessions are the ones when both Luke and Henry touch the ball, where, you know, Henry gets a touch and he gives it up to Luke, or vice versa, where Luke draws some defenders and gets it to Henry cutting to the basket, or they at least get a shot to back down their man, where, as I said earlier, Henry doesn't do that as well, especially when he's 10 plus feet away, but at least Luke does that at a pretty good rate. So I think possessions when both those guys get a touch are the best. The possessions that are the most frustrating is when neither one of them gets a touch and a three goes off the back rim. Those are the most frustrating possessions to me, and I think we saw a few of those definitely during that 7 minute stretch, during that 21-0 run when Xavier really just kind of took the game over from Marquette. So that's kind of where I think a lot of the frustration from Saturday comes, was just empty possessions and just the going down up against that zone and thinking, gosh, I have no idea what I'm going to do here.
Yeah, well, and it's especially frustrating in comparison to what they did against, you know, Villanova on Wednesday, where they were attacking the rim. They weren't settling for three-point shots. You know, that they were moving the ball and forcing Villanova to kind of adjust on defense. So, again, and you know, it's such a cliche, but it's a cliche for a reason, because it's true. This is such a young team. They're going to continue to make young, inexperienced mistakes. You know, at some point you hope they kind of, you know, by the time the season's over, you're no longer freshmen really. So you would hope at some point they'll pull it all together. But amongst all the games they've played, there are enough, you know, good parts within those games that you know they're capable of it. It's just the consistency that is simply not there, and I'm not sure how they get
there.
Yeah,
can they put together 40 good minutes? That's asking a lot out of a...
I mean, because even in their wins, they didn't have 40 good minutes. Providence, they had maybe 35 good minutes, and, you know, so...
Can we get 30 good minutes?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, consistently, and you know, we'll deal with the rest the rest of the way and see if they can just hold on, because, you know, teams are going to make a run against this young team. But yeah, it was tough watching. It's just the way, you know, it just kind of slipped away. It's like, you know, well, it felt like they were getting blown out, but Xavier was just kind of begging them to get back in, because as bad as Marquette's three-point shooting was, Xavier's wasn't much better. I think that's a big reason Marquette was able to hang around and at least get like as close as they did, because Xavier was 5 of 22 from three.
So. Yeah, that's Marquette like shooting.
So I mean, they didn't shoot the ball particularly well either. So I don't know if the game will go much better when Marquette gets a rematch, because that'll obviously be in Xavier's place. But you know, you live and you learn. And we'll see what kind of adjustments Marquette makes over the next two games as we kind of look ahead. Because this is the, if you're looking at the schedule, this is the chance for some healing here. You know, with all due respect to DePaul and St. John's, that is last and next to last in the conference. And we're not going to talk about the fact that Marquette is right above the only team above them. Marquette is hanging there in eighth.
Shh. We're in striking distance.
You are what you are, as we always say. You are what your record says you are. Marquette is currently the eighth place team in the Big East. But a chance to get a couple wins on the board here, you know, because if you don't want to be in last place, if you want to keep those slim postseason hopes alive, notice I said postseason, not necessarily NCAAs, if you want to keep those postseason hopes alive, you got to beat these teams. You have to beat the two teams in last place, DePaul and St. John's. Now, St. John's gave Marquette a bit of a scare the last time around. At home, so now Marquette's going to have to go to New York and see how they do there. But first things first, DePaul at home, got to win this one, Phil. I mean, there's just no excuses. Like I said, if you want to be taken seriously, if you want to take positive steps forward, you have to win this game.
DePaul doesn't have a win in conference, correct? And neither does St. John's.
They are both winless in the conference.
Yeah, you can't be that team that lose. And you know,
the disaster scenario is you're the first win for both.
Yeah, well, and, you know, I don't mean this seriously, but if you lose to DePaul at home, shut the program down. Just shut it down. You've got to show some pride and some fight. And this is clearly going against DePaul. You know, we talked about with the Xavier game, what's the breakdown of why they failed. There is no talent disparity for Marquette. Marquette is clearly the more talented team.
They absolutely should be. Now, the thing that worries about DePaul, they have put some scares in some teams in conference play. I mean, they lost – I mean, they – let's see. They hung around with Georgetown for a long time. They only lost by 5 to Butler. They only lost by 4 to Seton Hall. They got blown out by Xavier. And I guess they hung with Creighton for a little bit, but Creighton pulled away in that game and won that game by 11. So – DePaul will put a scare in you because that's what DePaul does. I mean, especially against us. That usually happens at their place. We'll deal with that later on in the season. But, you know, Marquette at home, all the students are back. So hopefully we have a nice crowd in the student section.
And we don't have to bribe them.
We don't have to give them pizza. that was a point of contention on Twitter. We'll just touch on that a little. You know, it almost made me sad that to be the crusty old back in my day kind of guy. But, you know, I was like, oh, if we can get a bunch of students to the Xavier game, we'll give you guys a pizza party. I don't know. I have not seen anywhere that pizza party is happening. So I don't know if they got 2,000 students to the game. But upon further review, I guess a reason that 2,000 was tough. And the thing is, I don't know if 2,000 is even typical for the students these days. But I guess the students were just getting back on campus that day, on that Saturday, at least the out-of-town or, like, out-of-Milwaukee, Chicago area students.
Right,
the dorms opened up that Saturday. So maybe it was tough for, like, out-of-state students to be there, so maybe 2,000 was overly optimistic, but I hope...
Right, the Alaska contingent couldn't make it in, so that probably prevented us from getting to 2,000.
I don't even know the final numbers. I don't know if Marquette got... Maybe they did, and I hope everyone enjoys their pizza on Monday if they get some, but... yeah, I would hope that if all the students were on campus, they wouldn't have to be begged to go out to see a top 10 team play. You know, am I right or wrong there? You know, if there's a top 10 team coming to the Bradley Center, I think anyone on campus who likes basketball, I know this concept is foreign to you and me, Phil, but there are students who maybe don't like sports on campus. There are people who don't like sports in this world. I know. I don't know how they entertain themselves as much as we do. But
listen, I went to Marquette so I could watch basketball. Studying was something I had to do.
Yeah, but you know, but again, it's a nice thing. I guess they just wanted to honor the students and welcome them back. But the just the way it was kind of framed, like if we can get a bunch of students to the Bradley Center, we'll have pizza for you. I'm like, man, do they do this at Duke? You know, do they even do that in Madison?
I guarantee you they do not.
Oh, man. But please support the Marquette basketball team. If you have tickets, go to the games. That team needs your support, especially against this schedule where Marquette is really not honestly expected to win that many more games. So hopefully there will be a big home court advantage. Certainly on Wednesday against DePaul, and then with some big home games coming up after that against Butler. Villanova is going to be coming to the Bradley Center. We still have Creighton and Providence coming to the Bradley Center. So, yeah. So there are some big games. So hopefully, again, I'm trying not to be the crusty old back in my day kind of guy, but fill the Bradley Center up. If you got your tickets, this team needs your support. And if Henry Ellenson is going to be a star in the NBA one day, you're going to want to be able to say, yeah, I saw that guy play a lot and it was pretty awesome.
Well, and, you know, and not, I want to pick on all the fans, not just the students. Like, enough with the sitting on the hands. Like, yeah, the team's got some struggles and whatnot, but like, get enthusiastic. Why are you at the game if you're not cheering and excited and trying to support the team? Like, it just feels like there's a general malaise amongst the fans, and I'm not sure why that is or what's going on. I don't know if this is an expectations thing that we expected them to be a top 10 team because Henry Ellenson showed up or what, but you know, there just needs to, I feel like the Bradley Center is not the home court advantage it could be. Given the talent on the team right now.
This ends the get off my lawn portion.
The curmudgeon portion of the
podcast. All we're saying, be loud for this team. They're a bunch of 18, 19, 20-year-old kids who want your support, and they're going to get some good wins this year, unlike last year where they were pretty much overmatched in almost every Big East game they played. This team's going to get some nice wins, and I hope they will have two wins this week. One of them will be Wednesday at home against DePaul. So let's get back to talking about the games, Phil, once we, you know, put down our prune juice and everything and stop griping about fans. No matter if there are two fans in the building, I still expect Marquette to have enough energy to beat DePaul, because when you look at KenPom, Marquette is not projected to win a game from January 30th all the way through February. They're projected to lose all of them. So that would be really rough. So
For those counting at home, that is 8 losses in a row they're projected.
Yeah, and Marquette is actually projected to lose 9 of its last 10. The only projected win going game by game right now is Georgetown at home, and that's only projected to be a 1-point win. So,
yeah, but keep in mind, like, they've got – KenPom's got DePaul as a loss on the road at 49% certainty. So that's – it's there's a handful of 50-50
yeah,
games
Creighton,
in there.
Creighton has his 44. Like, there are three games in a row there that are kind of 50-50. That's Providence at home, Creighton at home, and DePaul away. Both, like, 1 or 2 point spreads. So – and if Marquette played more efficiently, KenPom would might reflect that better. So this would be a great three-game stretch here. DePaul, St. John's, and this stupid Stetson game that I really don't want to talk about ever is...
I think we should institute a no-hat policy.
No hats. That would be actually a funny promotion. No,
yeah.
Like, no hat.
No one's allowed to wear a hat to the game.
I mean, you could wear it outside because it's freezing cold out there, but yeah, no hats at the Stetson game. I think that'd be kind of funny. But it is a three-game stretch to rebound. Just get some confidence, even if it's a little bit of false confidence. Just get a couple wins in conference play. Even the record at 4-4, because if they win the next three games, they would be 4-4 in conference. And then you take your chances in February and see how many wins you could get, and then we'll stack up the chips at the end and see exactly where Marquette is. But you have to beat DePaul at home. You have to beat St. John's, even though it's on the road and it'll be challenging just because it's going to be in their place. Good opportunity for Marquette to rebound after, again, although we're upset about the losses, if we're going game by game and realistic expectations of finishing slightly above 500, those were still two games Marquette was projected to lose. So it's not like they lost any ground projection-wise losing those two games. But now you're in a position where it was total. I guess losing to DePaul is always unacceptable, but it is
unacceptable not okay
to lose to DePaul and St. John. So critical games, and all joking aside, I expect the team to be very focused. It's not like I don't have any worries that like Wojo has lost the team or anything, or like no. I mean, obviously they're disappointed they lost, but I think they're going to take some positives out of the last two losses and carry them into the DePaul game. And like I said, I think it's a great opportunity if we talked about earlier, getting that 2-3 zone, using it a little bit more, using it against a competent opponent. So it's not like they're going to be using this against Stetson to try it out more. Using it against DePaul and St. John's to see how it goes. And I think it'd be a great opportunity for more and see how a rotation works with 20 plus minutes from Wally Ellison.
Right, exactly. Well, and the other thing that I think I'm interested to see is if these games go the way they do, does Matt Helt get a few more minutes of run so there is at least a firewall potentially should Luke Fisher get in foul trouble again that maybe Helt can come in and give more than the 3 or 4 minutes that he's given, which quite frankly were surprising over the last 2 weeks that Matt Helt was coming. When I saw Matt Helt was the first sub off the bench, I just about hit the – I assumed it was Wally and I had to do a double.
Yeah, pick. I think Helt's role stays the same, to be honest with you. I think he will come off the bench if Luke or Henry are in foul trouble early just to get those guys a break and try to go 4 minutes without them getting another foul. And then if it's one-sided late, hopefully in Marquette's favor – certainly against Stetson, if that's the case, then maybe he could close out the game and play a lot of minutes at the end against Stetson. But as far as Wednesday and Saturday against DePaul and St. John's, and even most of the game, I think, honestly, rotation-wise, I think for the most part, as long as there's no injuries, you're treating Stetson like a Big East game. I don't think you totally start experimenting and just giving bench players a ton of minutes. I think you only do that at the very end when the game's out of hand. I think you treat it the same way. And to answer your question, I think Helt's role stays exactly the same. Only comes off early in the game or early in the second half if Fisher's in foul trouble and you need another big in there.
Well, given the RPI impact, I'd actually advocate we go like freeze the court or something so that Stetson game just has to be get it really humid in there so they can't play, so it has to be canceled. Because that one, if we don't play that game, it'll actually help the RPI.
Actually, it's true. Yeah,
it's sad, but it's totally true.
Unleash a bunch of bats or something.
Yeah, that's worked in the past.
Well, I played through the game, but I would not hate it if weather conditions prevent Stetson from traveling. Like, you know what? We're just going to cancel that game. I'd be like, okay, well, let's just have an extra day of practice then.
Right, exactly. But you could probably get some people off the street to scrimmage and get about the same effect.
Yeah, so I guess that pretty much wraps up our look at Marquette basketball for this week. Bottom line, disappointed in the losses, even though we expected both of them. Important opportunities coming up this week. Maybe must win is overstating it, but it's must.
I don't think
it's must win.
It's must win.
Got to win both these games, and we'll see where we are a week from the night, and hopefully we will be glazing over a game against Stetson as we look ahead to a critical stretch for Marquette that will begin with Butler at home on January 30th. One thing I do want to mention before we get out of here, congrats to Michael Mackey, who got rewarded with a scholarship for his last semester at Marquette. Of course, he's a senior walk-on, and I'm happy for him because certainly he and his brother last year came in when Marquette really needed them, when they were just so shorthanded and they just needed bodies to complete a practice. And if you saw the video, it's nice. There's probably been hundreds of videos of that of things like that over the last few years when a walk-on gets surprised with a scholarship. But I think still it's not something Wojo had to do. But it was something that I think is good to do when you have a scholarship that's sitting there unused to give it to a kid who has worked hard like Mackey has. So good for him. I'm glad he doesn't have to pay for this last semester at Marquette. That money will help. And it's good for him because he is a good example and for the rest of the team as far as effort and energy. And I'm happy that Wojo did that for him.
Yeah, it reflects well on the university and on the team, and nothing negative you can say about it. So that's good.
And who knows? Hopefully we can get him into that Stetson game.
Yeah, I have a feeling he'll earn that scholarship that game.
If things go really well, hopefully he plays against DePaul and St. John's too. So
that would be awesome.
That's what I'm hoping for this week. Again, as always, we thank you for listening, everyone. You can check us out on Twitter. I'm Joe McCann 3. Phil is MOOF23. Team page would be Crack Sidewalks on Twitter. Of course, you can go to cracksidewalks.com. We post the podcast there. You can leave your comments, your thoughts, your questions there. Of course, we have a Facebook page as well for Scrambled Eggs. You get to find us on there. We post the podcast there. And download us on iTunes. Take us wherever you want to go. Phil, let's get 2 wins this week. Gosh dang it.
Yeah, let's just get out there, get the wins, get
and
rolling
get
into
pizza
the
Monday,
games that
you
matter.
Kids, you hardworking cheering kids, we're happy for you.
Welcome back to school. The semester started. Get out there and get us a victory.
And support the team. Until next time, seashells and balloons, everyone.